infinite n. So it's just classical gravity. But I'm just saying that if you allow for fluctuations around that classical background, semantic has shown that still the same thing works. That's what I'm saying. Also, you have to make sense of the action, right? The action is infinite. You know the holographic normalization story. But those also won't play any role because they're stuck to the boundary because they're just boundary interactions. And as you see my diagrams, they won't play any role in the long time. So these computations are also done. OK, before moving forward, OK. Before moving forward, let me tell you a little bit about the backend, the compute, and also without showing you any of the details that are all in a paper, we find that this one loop calculation is most transparent in Schumann telescope system. And if we write our one loop diagram in terms of this Schumann basis, we can make use of causality in the best way that we can. So just to give you a picture of what we're doing. So what we're trying to do is that we're going to calculate an amplitude, the correlation function for two insertions in the boundary of this structure black hole. And if there's a time flow in our diagrams, the only region we have to work in is going to be this quadrant. Because this is the quadrant where everything is closely connected. But you might think that there's a cut here, and that means that actually I have to put the imaginary part of the basically the fluctuation function here. And fluctuation function, for those who know ABCFD and Schrödinger transformation, they know that those are sensitive to the other boundary. Meaning that in order to compute this, you have to actually use the Kruskal coordinates in order to see the entire geometry. And those would provide you with the second propagator. Yes. But the thing is that we are at equilibrium, so that means that life is simple. And these fluctuation functions are to relate to this fluctuation dissipation relation are related to the imaginary part of the Green's function, the retarded Green's function. So you can work within this wedge without worrying about the rest. So that simplifies a lot of it. These diagrams, as I mentioned, they all have time flow directions. This means that this point on the top is in chronological future at this point. And if there are two time flows going around in this loop, in these two opposite directions, that means that this diagram is zero, because this violates causality. The reason for this is simple. There are theta functions in this Green's function, and one goes in one direction, the other one goes in the other direction, so it's zero. So, and also, in order to compute this, I have to tell you what are these external wave functions. We're talking about curved background, so these external wave functions are going to be non-trivial, both for ingoing and outgoing. And I have to tell you what are the two-bulk propagators for various fluctuations in the bulk. So that's also something. And we need the imaginary part of this Green's function in order to compute this diagram. On top of that, we have to know the vertices. What are the vertices that are important for this process? We identify two types. One is the cubic vertex, like this, and the other one is a quartic one. It is, well, we show it in our paper that the ones that have this quartic form, they're all subleading in a large times, meaning that they don't contribute to the tail 1 over tau. They're just exponentially tau. So they don't contribute. And also, we use this as a guiding light in order to eliminate other possible fluctuations that can run into these loops. If you have, well, let me give you an example, a piece of intuition that we use in simplifying these diagrams, is that if there is a mode in this diagram running in this propagator that has a time lifetime that is microscopic, meaning that it's short compared to diffusive physics, that would amount to pinching these two points. And once you pinch that, pinch these two vertices, you turn a cubic vertex into a quartic point. And we have already computed that, and we know that that doesn't contribute. Right? So this also, this is also another piece of intuition that we use and simplify a lot of these diagrams. We have a whole list of these things in our papers, so you can go through if you want and see the details. This was a side comment I don't think I need to talk about it anymore. What we do is that we use the fact that a black hole to all orders in perturbation theory remains in equilibrium with its atmosphere, basically, because we're using the the so-called KMS conditions in order to relate the fluctuation function to the imaginary part. And it's a fair assumption using this old result for gibbons and Perry. Okay, well, let me start off by telling you what kind of fluctuation can run into this, in these loops. Because just to remind you, the task would be immense. If you just work out the possible vertices of Einstein theory, like the self-couplings that Einstein theory has, right? Plus it's coupling to the Maxwell equation. But not all of them are relevant. That's why this computation is cool. But you have to think about it hard, a little bit harder. So it turns out, after doing paying attention to intuitions like what I just mentioned, and taken more seriously, you find that in order for these diagrams to contribute to long-time tails, both perturbations in the loop should be long-lived and diffusive. If there is a perturbation in this loop, well, when I say a perturbation has to be long-lived, you're talking about the bulk side, but I'm talking about the dual fluctuation to the corresponding Hardy dynamic mode in the boundary theory. If that mode relaxes on some microscopic time scale, that would amount to pinching these two vertices, and that would not contribute to the long time. Another interesting thing is that you can, as far as these long time tails are concerned, you can think of all of these here as being on shell. All of these, even the fields in the loop. And the reason for this is the fact that, again, we know that all these these amplitudes are on shell modulo contact terms. And those contact terms give you terms that are contributions to the final result that are localized in time or space. You have just delta functions. And they don't contribute to the runtime tails either. Another way of thinking about this is that at the end of the day, you're calculating some cut diagram. These are the imaginary part of something. And you know that just using cut rules, you know that you can put these fluctuations in the loop and show. Get the imaginary part. Right. Yeah, okay. So that actually shortened the list of possible fluctuations. All you can have is that you can have current fluctuations, which we know is conserved and long-lived. You want current fluctuations, or you can have stress fluctuations. But again, using equations of motion, you can show actually charge fluctuations always dominate over current fluctuations. The reason is just this simple relation. These modes are diffusive, right? So omega goes like k squared. And that means that this contribution goes like 1 over k. And for a small k, a t is going to dominate over a z. The same thing happens in the stress channel. And fluctuations in momentum are going to dominate over stress fluctuations. Putting all of these, I'm not used to this fancy things. Okay. You can move on and compute the possible vertices.
Yeah, can we do that? So far you discussed only the fluctuations which are in the superparameter approximation. What about spin states?
Well, as I mentioned, the ones that live for a very long time, so the massive right. states and these things, they all relax on a short time scale. They never enter into this kind of discussion. In order for this to continue, you need a pole on the imaginary axis for this to
occur. So you need the okay. So it's not so pretty much something that's behave like a quasi particle will not contain.
You only need the mass step in the sense that omega k.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
For k going to zero, it should go to zero. You need a pole on the imaginary axis in order to have something on zero in the center. That's where the string theory is irrelevant.
It's right.
Can I ask a naive question? So these diagrams that you've drawn, am I allowed to think of them as arising as some pinching of some string loop diagram?
You don't need to. I mean, if you didn't know string theory, it would still work.
The reason that I ask this question is that if I'm allowed to do that, but I know that for the master
states, you can get these amplitudes from some string theory computations.
No. For master states, I know that supersymmetry protects these. 2-point functions, so these diagrams would sum up to zero.
No, there's no supersymmetry. There's a sum of.
But these wouldn't apply to n equal to 4 in that case.
Sorry?
So these wouldn't apply to n equal to 4?
But I'm not at finite temperature, I believe. You can set up a supersymmetry in the bottom, which would protect this amplitude. Actually, a similar computation can be done in the fermionic sector, the gravitino, which corresponds to the fluctuations of the supercharge. And it turns out that there are no long-term tails in that sector. Do you want to discuss it? Yeah. So, am I going to the right one? Yeah. So you can compute the vertices, the cubic vertices I was talking about, in a very similar sense that any field theorist would do for any field theory, basically you compute the vertices. The piece of physics that you have to do, so basically you have some third variation of your action with respect to these fluctuations, and the only piece of physics you have to use here is that there are many contributions here after taking this third derivative of the action, but they are either zero by our gate choice or they are suppressed by powers of k. So these are the terms you don't want in your vertex because they would give you extra corrections that are either down by more powers of tau or they are exponentially suppressed. So you don't need those. And after all of this song and dance, you end up with a result that can be written entirely in terms of the momentum of the fields. So you see, this is actually charge fluctuations because it involves radial derivative, k of tau, as opposed to the field itself. And also it involves radial derivative of the graviton, which is basically the gravitational momenta associated with this fluctuation. you can do that. And again, the same integral shows up. But now you have a coupling between two momentum fluctuations pointing in two different, with two different polarizations. But again, same coupling. OK, just keep this particular form of this coupling in mind. I'll come back and talk about properties of this function g of r. So just to summarize what I've said, there are basically there are only two types of vertices, and there's one that is irrelevant to what we do. And these are the type of diagrams that we worry about. And these are the ones with some current, external currents, coupled to charge fluctuations and momentum fluctuations. And these are stress-stress correlators coupled to two momentum fluctuations with two different polarizations.
So could you remind me what happens if you have a graviton moving the loop in the last diagram?
Actually, we go through the list in our paper. This has something to do with the fact that H, X, Y components of the metric fluctuations in the ball are negligible. So this diagram is also doesn't use. So we need to work out the external wave functions. Because the upshot is that you can write the external wave functions. What is the external wave function? It's a boundary to Borg propagator that you need in order to compute the written diagram. Here I can complete the intuitive picture that. So the only thing that you have to take away from this slide is the fact that if you focus on JX, JX correlation functions, then you'll find that there are quasi-normal modes for the associated fluctuation in the ball. And these quasi-normal modes are all of imaginary axis. That is going to play an important role in what I'm going to say. So basically, am I supposed to stop in 5 minutes?
No.
Hope not.
5 past 12.
So the correlation function that we are going to focus on is this particular polarization. So you have an insertion at some reference time 0, and then you remeasure this component, the charge fluctuation at some very long time tau. And all I'm saying is that the fluctuation that couples to this AX, which is AX, which falls into the black hole, which is the black hole horizon in some coordinate system, has a quasi-normal behavior. And all the poles in this quasi-normal spectrum are off imaginary axis. That means that this fluctuation wants to dissipate on microscopic time scales given by the compared to this finishing fragment. Okay, but we didn't stop here, and we did the analysis that we were supposed to do. We computed wall-to-wall propagators. There are a few technicalities that you have to take into account, but this is all in our paper. And when you compute these wall-to-wall propagators, you run into another oddity before you know it, before you understand how it. Which again simplifies the life and the calculations, and that is this seemingly right. So, as it already came up in our discussion, you can think of these fluctuations in gravitational momenta and also in the ball density fluctuation as being extended into the ball, and we can repackage Einstein's equation and Maxwell's equation in a form of a flow equation for these variables. So basically, that's like rewriting Einstein's equation in terms of these new variables, and the content of Einstein's equation would be equal to the content of these flow equations. So it can be shown, and it's in our paper, the content of Einstein's equations and Maxwell's equation can be summarized into this nice forums. Similar observations have been made before by Paul and Lou in a relatively recent paper. And what happens is that you find out that at very long times and small momenta, there's basically no flow for TMU into the ball. But this flow equation tells you that the derivative of, radial derivative of this the stress fluctuation is zero. So that explains why we got a ball to ball propagator which was exactly identical to, because there's no flow. And this equation holds up unless you're exponentially close to the horizon, and you know you're not, because that's around physics. No what around physics. Okay. So this way we do the integrals, and the integrals exactly match with the prediction apart from dynamics that I showed you in a few slides in the beginning of my talk. But let me make another little comment about a related problem that I'm thinking about right now. And it should have something to do with this story of long time tail. There is a separate, totally or seemingly independent story that has been running into the GR community for a very long time, like it's a long time, almost 4 decades. That one game that was interesting for people, and okay, probably still interesting for many, is to probe this black hole background with some field or some spin and watch it evolve. So basically what happens is that, so you basically do the real-time analysis of the field fluctuation that interacts with this black hole and see what happens. So basically, you have three different contributions that comes in. One contribution is the direct. So if you have a, if you're in the black hole background, this is the horizon. This is your observation point. There is a wave packet in this background, which wants to fall into the black hole and also escape to the infinity. You get, depending on what time scale you talk about, you get three different contributions. One contribution is the direct hit. Okay? So if there's a wave packet centered somewhere, you see the wave packet flying towards you or away from you. Okay. That's one contribution that comes in. There's another contribution is the familiar quasi-normal modes. These are basically the ringing of the black hole. But for asymptotically flat black holes, this actually is not true in AES space. For asymptotically flat black hole, there is an extra contribution that is called the late time tail fluctuation. So basically what happens is that the amplitude, properly normalized and everything, of this field goes like 1 T to some power. This is after all the transient, the quasi-normal modes, and also the direct hit has passed. That's what happens. But the observation was back in the 90s that these long-time tails are absent in AES space. They only exist in the asymptotically flat space. And the reason why they happen in asymptotically AES space is that you can turn the problem of this studying this fluctuation of this whole field on this black hole background as studying some corresponding Schrodinger equation. You can turn it into a Schrodinger equation and there's an effective potential. You find out that for asymptotic flat spaces, the asymptotic region of this potential has a parallel tail. So basically, the fluctuation that goes off to infinity still can interact at infinity and backstep and come back. So even at very late times, there are still contributions coming from interactions from the asymptotic region coming in. These are absent in AES because the form of this potential is not parallel anymore. It's actually exponential. So what I think is happening is that the arguments that I just gave you and this long time tail phenomena just indicates that they have to be there, also in AES space. We haven't been able to see them because we're doing linear perturbation theory in this background. Once you go nonlinear, you have to be able to see them. And the argument for the existence of this late time tails in black hole physics comes from an unlikely source, just the hydrodynamics. So it would be nice to make this connection. So I'm working on it. Okay, let me summarize and let you guys go before you start keeping you here. Okay, so I hope I've convinced you that certain aspects of nonlinear hydrodynamics can emerge from an anti-resistance space. It's counterintuitive in the beginning. It seems that late time tails must come from deep IR region because you send off stuff with black hole and you have a very long time before it comes back. So interaction should happen in the near horizon region, but this is exactly what's not happening actually. The existence of these long lived modes, they are all tied to the existence of the horizon, right? But the scale at which they interact is set by something else. And that's like T minus one here. Well, this is something that I didn't get to talk about much. The role of asymptotic region is not clear, because it seems that things are happening either near horizon or at scale t minus 1 b equal to 3 case. And below is very interesting because this is a work in progress that I'm doing with Sabir. And so d equal to 3 and below is very interesting because the Kubo formula actually fails in this dimensions. And instead of a fixed value for shear viscosity calculated at low frequencies with the Kubo formula, you end up with a running log. So you have to define your shear viscosity at some scale, and then from there you can run.
That statement is a free problem.
Sorry?
The statement you just made is a free problem.
This is a big problem, yes. And also, it would be interesting to develop mode coupling theory, the thing that I just described, for a system that is critical in the bulk, and see how this is going to affect everyone. I can explain to you more about what kind of ideas I have here. So if the bulk theory is showing some second order phase transition, there's an extra mode that is going massless. And that enters into your credit description, and that changes hydrodynamics. And in particular, depending on how that mode couples to the rest, there's a classification of this system. There are 9 classes of dynamic critical phenomena, depending on how these extra mode couples. So it would be interesting to explore that avenue more. Thank you very much for listening.
So what was the result of your integrals after you did all the calculations?
So the result is exactly identical to the
And you didn't have to choose a cutoff or something?
This no, as I showed you, like the fluctuations running in the loop have a natural cutoff. And that's the long time scale. Well before it's insensitive to the region. So actually, the region near the horizon is a dangerous region, right? Because these, so this is the horizon, okay? So the region near the horizon, like for a fluctuation to look very long time and in the boundary, you can go to very short times but in the near horizon, it's sort of like transatlantic problem. So there's this map. But that region, as I argue, is irrelevant. So it's insensitive to how you complete that part of the geometry.
Did you think about what role string loop effects have on this?
But as I mentioned, they should not. Well, they definitely modify this result, but they modify at higher orders.
I'm not sure about that, because when you there's a well-known four graviton term in type 2b,
mm-hmm.
R4, and the string loop correction actually it comes at 1 over n squared, but there's an enhancement, there's a square root of lambda as well.
Yes.
Why
but that's fine, this is fine, and it is important that this term has no lambda dependence of that four. It's 1 over n squared, nothing like that. So because this term wouldn't make any, the term that you're talking about wouldn't make any sense unless lambda is infinite, n is infinite, but the combination could be something, right? But if it's 1 over, if I'm keeping n fixed and sending lambda to infinity, which is the limit I'm working with, I'm not including any alpha prime correction, that correction wouldn't make any sense. That correction would be infinite or zero, depending on where lambda sits. But this is 1 over n squared. So it's a different type.
So actually, it's kind of related to the first Aninda question, but from the other perspective. I would let me ask it the following. So in order to get, let's forget about gravity and string theory. In order to derive the slow time tails, you need a nonlinear hydrodynamics, which is a conservation law for the current and the stress energy terms. As long as there are this nonlinear convection terms, you're guaranteed to get it. Is that right?
Well, depending on whether hydrodynamics is weakly coupled or not.
Yeah,
and I'm just saying
hydrodynamics by definition.
Yeah.
So as well, and by weakly coupled, you mean that all transport coefficients are finite.
That's what I mean.
That's what you mean. Now what I would say that this is an expected result, because if we use Minvala and other company approach, we know that the dynamics of fluctuations in ABS is actually a nonlinear hydrodynamics.
I know,
but I agree with you that that's highly non-trivial to actually explain how these loop computations in the hydrodynamics are mapped into a gravity bar and confirm that that works. But in principle, the instance we established the nonlinear terms.
Of course, there are many things in this business, as you know, because you work on, that there are expected, because at the end of the day, what we're doing is that we're checking conservation laws. That's what hydrodynamics is.
No, but then
it's effective theory of conservation.
On top of what I said. No, for instance, I know that there is a convection term in my or second order hydrodynamics plus conservation law. Once I established it, I should get it.
Of course, yeah. Okay. But what Shiraz and company do is that they computed one point function. That's what they compute.
Right, but by doing that, they established nonlinear terms.
It's a different way of organizing
the computation, much more complicated and much more transparent, because you actually show which part of physics is responsible for which process.
Yeah, but in principle you're right. Yeah. Because we know that through Shiraz's procedure, you can not only get the diffusive part, but you can get the non-diffusive part too. That's absolutely
right. Any further questions?
Okay, let's thank Hamid again.